War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, live from Capitol Hill. It is Thursday, the 2nd of January, year of our Lord, 2020. Episode 96. Remember, this show is every day, 7 days a week, until the day after the acquittal. Or is it the exoneration of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States? We're going to get into all of that. Raheem Kassam, my wingman, is here. UKIP fame, Brexit fame. I guess we're now on the 29-day countdown to Brexit. Raheem, every day we're going to get a little update from you where we actually stand with our mother country leaving the EU. Jason Miller's on assignment today in South Florida, and he will be on the John Cardilla Show on Newsmax TV, one of our distributors, today. I think it's 3 or 4, 4 o'clock to 5, 3 to 4. We'll get the exact time here. John Cardilla Show, Jason Miller sitting in with John today. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network nationwide, also in AmericasVoice.news, streaming in the United States and throughout the known world. And, of course, Newsmax TV, the fastest-growing cable news operation, now passing 70 million homes with Chris Ruddy and the team. And Gateway Pundit and other conservative websites that have us on the homepage. I want to thank Jim Hoft and all the guys at Gateway. Very honored today to be joined by a historic figure in this entire movement, Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina. In fact, you were on the very first live episode we had, episode 4, back on 24 October. And one of the reasons that this whole thing kicked off is because we were reading the buried leads in the stories that kept saying Mark Meadows down in paragraph 11. I've sat into every one of these things.
Amen.
And there's nothing going on.
There's nothing going on. And there's still not anything
so we're
going
to get into
We're episode 96. And contrary to what Speaker Pelosi continues to say, is there's still nothing going on. And you know why we know that? She wants more witnesses.
Well, we're going to get into all that. I want to go back in time.
I got one quick question for you. Yep. Why is Jason Miller in South Florida in the wintertime? I mean, come on, you guys.
I know.
We're doing it where it's freezing.
We're doing the heavy once again, the heavy lifting. That was the same thing on the campaign, right?
Yeah.
So the CEO did the heavy lifting. The communication strategies glided. I want to start this off. This is a tough clock on this morning live show, and so we got to move on with things. But it's important to go through it and understand how we got here. And how we got here is not just from October 24th, right? It's really the established order, the nullification project that Nancy Pelosi is part of. But it started longer ago than that. And I remember, I just want to go back in time into the summer of 2015, okay? The summer of 2015 will be looked at as one of the most disruptive 90-day periods in American political history when it's studied. From the time Donald Trump came down, I think on the 16th of June of 2015, until the late September of that, so basically 100 days, those 100 days changed American politics. We not only had Donald Trump come down and basically throw down on the established order at the time, but a young congressman, or maybe a not so young congressman, a relatively new congressman, though.
That's correct.
You got elected in 2012.
That's correct.
In fact, you came in and joined really in the Tea Party Revolt of 10. You were the guy famously that was a businessman and a financier. You just wandered into a precinct meeting and nobody else showed up. And you
were the precinct chair.
At the end of the meeting, you're the precinct chair.
So all those listeners, they need to be careful. If you're the only one that shows up, you may be the leader.
But it shows you from the day you showed up to eight years later, or in 5 years later, you're making history. Let's go back. In late July, I think it was July 28th of 2015, you made a move, and we kind of chatted about it a little bit. You made a move called Vacate the Chair.
Yeah.
Where you dropped in a proposal right before everybody was leaving for the
summer
August.
Summer break.
You know, the August, and at that time, town halls were very big. And that was essentially to remove a sitting Speaker of the House, not about scandals,
right?
But about performance.
Right.
And I have never seen anybody, and this is a lesson for every person watching, I've never seen anybody mocked, ridiculed. People told me the guy might have had a good career. It's over. They're taking away his committee assignments. He's a buffoon. This thing, I mean, the mainstream media people I would talk to were belly laughing. This was the longest of long shots, right?
It was. I think even Mark Levin gave me less than a 5% chance of it working. You know, and so when your friends are saying, "Well, hey, you know, we appreciate the boldness," but you know, it was a lonely time. It was my birthday, July 28th.
But to go back, Trump came down the escalator in June of 15, right? And you had this explosive, and then you put the vacature. What was going on? You had a plan. A very specific idea of something that was happening.
We did. I don't do anything without a plan, even though mainstream media would suggest that it's always haphazard. I always have a plan. There used to be a great line off The Hunt for Red October, you know, where he was talking about the Russians. The Russians don't take a dump without a plan, you know. But at this particular point, the president comes down. And he had tapped into something. And at that time, it was candidate Donald Trump. And, you know, most of the people just knew him from The Apprentice and being a business guy in New York. But he comes down and taps into something that the American people were ready for. And that is enough of Washington, D.C., deciding what's best for me on Main Street. He knew better than that. And yet here we had a billionaire that connected better with the hardworking Americans across the country than the most seasoned politician. And so he tapped into that in July. They were mad that we had just reelected John Boehner as speaker. And so it's real easy to go after the other party. It's hard when you go after your own party.
Brutal.
And I can remember the headlines the day we put in the motion to vacate the chair, which, by the way, no one knew what it was. I Googled it trying to – I found it in the Jefferson Manual, and I Googled it, and there was like two references to it. And now there are millions of references to it. Everybody talks about it. But at that particular time, it was a little known.
Tell people what a motion to vacate is what?
So it is a privileged resolution which forces a vote of either confidence or no confidence on the speaker. And if the speaker doesn't get to 218, they're no longer the speaker.
This is the closest thing we have to a parliamentary system. Mm. This one device is what was left over from Parliament that they put into.
Exactly. It was designed that, you know, if you
vote of no confidence.
Vote of no confidence. But more than that, it wasn't just a vote of no confidence. It actually had consequences that if you didn't reach it. So here's the thing is, all the people that voted for John Boehner in January of 2015, they went back home. We went to the town halls. They were getting their heads handed to them.
Right.
And
remember, we had just taken the House back. Pelosi had been Speaker under Obama. In 14, we had that, and then Obama came with the next day. Honey badgered it, said, "I'm not changing." And they cratered on the omnibus and everything right there, just totally cratered, gave them everything you wanted. Boehner was then reelected as a speaker, or elected as a speaker in January. It's like, isn't this a guy that just created Obama? We just won an election, and Obama took the House over, and Obama just said, "Hey, heck with you guys."
Yeah, and you wish that they would show the same kind of boldness now, and that's what Donald Trump tapped into. And I didn't know Donald Trump other than, you know, from reputation. He's coming down. All of a sudden, he's this long shot. You know, he's this long shot that nobody.
Oh yeah, because Fox had just chopped him up in the first debate, or tried to. Megyn Kelly tried to chop block him right at the gate.
The only good thing about me putting in the motion to vacate on July 28th, right before we left, there were two things that happened. One is Donald Trump was getting most of the friendly fire, and I wasn't. And then the other is I knew that if the people would weigh in with their members of Congress over the August recess that
how did you have a gut feel that the town halls would light people up? Because it was all over the country. You see these town halls.
Yeah, it wasn't just in my district.
No, that's what would change it. I mean, we were following Breitbart very closely, but man, it was a firestorm.
Well, they were tired of broken promises. They were tired of people saying, "Please just give me your vote and your money and it'll be different." And what they saw is that it wasn't different. You know, you could vote in Republicans, Democrats. It didn't matter, and they wanted something different. And plus, I was seeing it even with some of my more moderate Republicans. They were nervous about their vote in what was going to happen. And the only thing that they bank on is when they vote for Speaker, it's 2 years before they're up for reelection. So they think that everybody forgets. And so my strategy was, make them vote again.
Exactly. Halfway through, make them famous.
Yeah. And it was, the headline was Meadows Army of One. And
I remember that. It was lonely. And by the way, so we got about 30 seconds here. And it took, what, 59 days and you removed a sitting speaker?
Yeah, 59 days. John Boehner resigns. And his first sitting speaker without a scandal or without illness.
And the establishment to save itself went to Paul Ryan, right? Because initial interview, Ryan wasn't even listed as a guy.
No.
It was McCarthy. You had a bunch of, you know, Kathy Rogers.
They went
to the bullpen quick because
they
got nervous. Okay, Raheem, how do people get to the site on 24/7 basis?
Warroom.org is everything you need to know, and we're rising again up the podcast rankings. So we thank everybody who's been tuning in over the course of the Christmas and holiday period. You can get all the information on warroom.org.
Short commercial break. Return with Mark Meadows, Congressman North Carolina, in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, impeachment. On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
War Room Impeachment, episode 96, live from Capitol Hill, just really yards away from historically the historic vote to impeach the 45th president of the United States. Took place a couple of weeks ago. Trial of the century. Curtain will come up on that over the next couple of days, and particularly as the House and the Senate both get back. I think the Senate's back today or tomorrow, and the House on Monday. So the games will begin. Joined with Mark Meadows, got Raheem Kassam here. Jason Miller is going to be the John Cardillo Show on Newsmax later in the afternoon at 3 o'clock, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time live. Jason will be in studio with John Cardillo. Always a great show, and I'm sure Jason and I had a lot to it today. The reason I want to go back, I've got Mark Meadows talk about the motion to vacate, and you understanding this. You were part of the Trump, I remember, on Billy Bush weekend. And that's, to me, the dividing line of who's with you and who's against you, right? On Billy Bush weekend, not only did you not falter, your lovely wife, who is, no offense, even tougher than you.
Yes, I mean, she is.
Tough as for a gracious Southern lady, she's tough as boot leather. She was on the bus of Christian ladies who were going across North Carolina on Billy Bush Saturday,
without a doubt.
Which was the darkest of the dark.
Well, it was. And listen, this is all about a fight for our country, Steve. You know that. And you know, who was she going to vote for? Hillary? But she was willing to be vocal. I mean, the good thing about it, they got press like never before. I mean, it would have been a bus that had no press, but instead, I mean, we had MSNBC, Washington Post, all these people following the bus around.
We had Huckabee, and we had the gals on the bus in Carolina. That was about it. You and Raheem, people don't realize this, is that you really got into this because of not just your interest, a Freedom Caucus, and obviously free market, limited government. All that, but you just got back from Australia. You and Raheem were both down there speaking at a conference talking about geopolitical affairs,
right?
Strategic affairs. I want to go back. You have had questions about our direction as national security and as a country from the beginning, and particularly you know the Devin Nunez's, but yourself, Jordan, where the guy's saying, hey, there's something going on here with this apparatus, this national security apparatus, that is just not about Donald Trump. It's deeper and more systemic than that. It's got to stop. Talk to us about that because, you know, your historical, you know, meaning as far as your ability to remove a sitting Speaker of the House because you strategically thought through it and had your hand on the pulse. You also had your hand on the pulse, and this is all going to come into fruition either in this trial or outside this trial.
Without a doubt.
So you don't have a tinfoil hat. We've proven that. So what?
Well,
where are
some
we?
Will disagree with you, but that's I don't. No, but exactly. I don't. And it's interesting because Raheem, when he was down in Australia, because of his lovely accent, they all loved him. I mean, I needed four translators. I mean, you know, it just, you know, the difference between a guy from North Carolina and South Carolina is we take three syllables to say hello. South Carolina takes four. And so as we look at this, you know, here's the interesting thing is, each one of us has a different gift. And you've had Matt Gaetz on, and Jim Jordan's been on TV and all over. The two of them have more skill in terms of their ability to reach people through the media than I ever thought of. The one advantage that I've been blessed with is strategically looking at things just like you're talking about. Is why are we involved? Why are we the policemen for the world? And instead, it is not an isolationist point of view. It's saying, let's have a limited strategic role in these countries. Obviously, you and I have talked about China before. There's probably no bigger threat. No bigger threat than really getting it right with China, which is hard to do. It's almost impossible to do. You've got, some would say, the largest economy in the world, or at least the second largest
economy. Biggest existential threat we've ever seen. And in North Carolina, you know the way they eviscerated the textile business down there. You've seen in the lumber
district.
Business.
My district, lumber, furniture, and textiles, we lost tens of thousands of jobs.
Of good jobs.
Yeah. And these folks are saying, well, gosh, should I ever do manufacturing again? Because is China going to scoop down? There's been one person in the Oval Office that's been willing to push back because the risks are so high, but the risk of not doing things are much higher.
That why the national security apparatus, you know, you had the Never Trump guys, that were all the Never Trump movement came out of the national security apparatus of the traditional Republican Party. But then you saw something deeper in that summer of 16 that we're now getting into, and this is Brennan and Clapper and the whole cabal. You really did the work with Meadows and others to say, hey, there's something deep here that's wrong. And this is this a policy debate? Is it a style debate? What was it that got them to say Trump's not acceptable and must be removed?
It's a policy and power debate. And I want to emphasize the power. This is all about, are we going to let the American people, along with their representatives and the President of the United States, establish foreign policy, or are we going to let the intel and national security apparatus continue to do whatever they've done for years, which is not effective? And so the reason why there was such a big pushback with Brennan and Clapper and all of those, and their day is coming. I promise you, their day is coming. When we look at the investigation that's going on now with Mr. Durham, he is finding things that will be very problematic. And where they're problematic is not just in the initial investigation. It is after January of 2017, before the president is actually sworn into office, they're still operating on trying to take him down when they knew they had no
case. I'm going to connect some dots here. Is this why, and one of the impetuses why we started this show, because I kept reading in the Washington Post, New York Times, buried down in 10 things, you were one of the few people that were sitting through all the depositions in the Star Chamber, right?
Yeah.
Is because you said there's nothing wrong here. If you brought this, he hasn't done anything wrong. Is that because the apparatus was sitting there saying, we know better. We know better than the commander in chief, and this is our policy? What was it that triggered you to say, hey, I've watched it, I've seen it, and now I know that Trump doesn't have a problem?
Every single person that testified for the Democrats would say, well, we didn't agree with the president's decision, or the president. It was unanimous that we should be giving the aid and it should be without conditions. It's unanimous. And I kept coming back to say, why would it be unanimous? We're talking about Ukraine and $400 million, less than $400 million, actually. And most people, they look at Ukraine and they say, well, gosh, come on, strategically.
A sideshow to a sideshow.
Yeah. And yet it was he dared to question the fact that we should be spending hard American taxpayer dollars in an inappropriate manner.
Does that tie back to Brennan, and it's going to tie back to Durham? Does it tie back to this mentality that he must be not just removed, but his entire movement and this entire concept must be stopped in its tracks?
Without a doubt. I mean, it's not just the President of the United States. I've said it. The listeners that are listening right now, they're not just coming after this president. They're coming out after each one of you who voted for him. They think that your position is against the United States, and it shouldn't be.
Okay, Raheem, how do we get the updates we're going to have after the Meadows interview today? Because I know we're lighting things up here.
You woke me up there. Warroom.org is the site for everything related. We're also going to be getting a lot of what Congressman Meadows said over the course of the show up there, ready and raring to go. And I want to thank some of the guys who have been sharing our stuff. Bongino Report, Citizen Free Press, Whatfinger.com, all these great aggregators that are rising up now, linking back to some of the stories. So hopefully, Congressman Meadows, a lot of that stuff will be distributed far and wide today.
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to return with Congressman Meadows. We're going to talk about the 40 subpoenas that were out there to Rosenstein when we return on War Room Impeachment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, welcome back, War Room Impeachment, episode 96. It's 2 January, the year of our Lord, 2020, a new decade. By the way, Brahim, I got so much positive feedback on the New Year's Eve and the New Year's Day show. We look back over 10 years. In fact, Brother Meadows here, our congressman, was one of the stars of the look back over the decade, the most disruptive decade in American political history, and then to look forward to the roaring 20s. We only get so much time here, so I want to go back. Nunez, when he was head of the House Intelligence Committee, put forward, I think, or various other committees, but I call it the 40 subpoenas to Rosenstein,
right,
as Deputy Attorney General. I would go on TV and said he should not be fired for the Mueller investigation. That's a separate deal, which he's running. But if he does not comply with these, and I know you would go to certain visits up on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, you would go on TV all the time, you'd go into the House, the well of the thing, pounding this, you and Jordan,
right,
that he had to comply with this. Why did that not happen? Because that, to me, those subpoenas, we know where the information is. It's like in the movie The Untouchables. You know where the whiskey is, right?
Right.
We know that those subpoenas bring forward everything these guys have been doing because it goes into the apparatus and extracts the information. Why did that never happen?
Well, two reasons. One is the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan at the time, didn't believe that there was a case there. And then once he did believe, you know, he wanted to be more judicious, you know, and so unlike Speaker Pelosi, who has given out subpoenas left and right, we weren't able to actually do that. Now, some of that was, well, we don't want to subpoena our own party. But I'm here to tell you, it is not our own party. It is the deep state that is there trying to undermine this president. And what we needed to do is not only subpoena, because you're right, the information is there. And what it's all connected to this impeachment. And let me just tell you, if you go on offense, all of a sudden we'll see the Democrats saying, well, let's shut this thing down. Because Adam Schiff, he knows the truth on a number of these things. And that's the thing that I fault him the most. He knew the truth and does know the truth and yet continues to put a fairy tale.
Okay, so this gets back to the beating heart of where we are today. That's why it's so great to have you on to really kick off the new decade and the new year, is that there is information out there that we know is exculpatory to the president, and not just that, to the president's movement of, hey, we've got to get this thing sorted out because we have a national security apparatus that's a little bit out of control,
right,
okay, and not responding to the will of the people in a Democratic election. And if Bernie Sanders and AOC and that crowd do not think it won't happen to them, I got news for you. It will happen to them.
Oh, I agree.
You're fighting for this is about the Constitution and really the control of the government, regardless of your political ideology or affiliation.
It is, and what we do see is the intelligence community is so interconnected with our allies, by the way, that what happens is that all of a sudden we have these operations that are being run against now a sitting president of the United States, and you say, well, how in the world could that happen in a constitutional republic? And yet it did, and it does, and we've got to get to the bottom.
Until we get to the bottom of that in a real process, and that's why I'd like the subpoenas to Rosenstein and get this information out, or through the grand jury process, until people see, and there's a process, or I've said, hey, you need a church-like commission to get this out there. This information needs to come out so people realize, hey, these are not guys with tinfoil hats. This is actually going on, and it's deep, it's systemic, and it must be stopped.
Well, I've been very cautious to never promise that I can deliver something that's not there. So when we've looked at a lot of this stuff, whether it's the text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, when we started to look at some of the other narratives, I have three buckets. The bucket I can prove, the bucket that I think very probably happen. And then that bucket that is out there that says if we get subpoenas to justify and support what we have, it'll blow wide open. And that's where we have to go with this.
We have some breaking news, if you want it, as it pertains to what we'll see in 2020. Julian Castro has just ended his presidential campaign. I know, not directly related, but we like to break news.
I'm waiting for Senator Bennett. Senator Bennett's in that one. Come out of the witness protection program, lay down your weapons, this is what is tied to me.
Right.
The short trial, the quick and dirty, get acquitted, in the long trial, which I say leads to exoneration today in the Senate and vindication at the polls in November. Where do you stand? Am I off base that we could tie it there, or you think it's other ways to do this? Because, God bless him, Lindsey Graham saying, let me do it at the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, and we can do some other off-site or offline. Somehow this has to be, those subpoenas that the House sent intelligence, the information there, the interaction of other intelligence agencies, ongoing operations, Clapper, Brennan, who ought to lawyer up, all these guys, that's all got to come out.
Well, it does. So to support your theory of a longer trial, it may be the only way that we actually get these documents would be through an impeachment trial, because I don't see, Lindsey Graham's counterpart on the Democrat side coming along and say, let's do good government and let's put some subpoenas.
The way the system works, and that means it gets shut down in the Senate.
Right.
It's a gentleman's club.
Yeah, you got to agree with your Democrat colleague, and I've never found that to be a strategy for success.
Not a lot of guys agree with you. Okay, we got to take another short commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about what's happening in this trial, what's happening with Nancy Pelosi, and also talk about the deeper issue of China and how our allies and enemies are going to all look to this. Go to warroom.org. You can get 24 hours a day. Raheem is always updating it with the staff and in the War Room team, the Rapid Response team. I want to thank all of the distributors, Salem, America's Voice, John Frederick's Radio, and Newsmax TV. Take a short commercial break. Back, breaking news with Congressman Meadows in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Frederick's Radio Network.
Episode 96, live from Capitol Hill, War Room Impeachment, 2 January, Year of Lord 2020. Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, honored to be joined by Congressman Mark Meadows. The IG report, one of the things I appreciate about it, you knew the seriousness of it and said, hey, guys, you got to read it, but you never overhyped it as it's going to be some explosive thing that's going to bring everybody down. You kept saying it's a means to an end, but you got to make sure it's locked into the process as a means.
Well, you're exactly right. And I think the key is a lot of people always want to say, this is the biggest bombshell that's coming. And then when it gets here, it's a dud. And yet it set in place areas for John Durham to follow up on. It set in place.
And he was very vocal, and everybody says he's not a guy to do that. And he came out and what he said about it.
Let me just tell you, I am looking forward to it. But even with John Durham's report, here's the problem is he's going to get to those areas where he can prove wrongdoing, and he will prove wrongdoing in a number of places. But there will also be that half dozen or dozen things where he says, this didn't smell right. I couldn't prove it, but it doesn't smell right. That's where we have to follow up. And that's why the impeachment trial, some of those things that you can pull out where you say it doesn't smell right, let them go under oath in front of the American
people.
Okay,
so that's the reason you're here today.
Yeah.
You're back. You're one of the first guys back here. It's going to start in the next 24, 48 hours. Where is Nancy Pelosi? Why is she holding it back? And what's going to happen at your phase? You guys still have some sort of say-so or can punch back on this before it even goes to the Senate.
Well, she's coming back. She's holding it because her case is not good. They said it's...
As you have said from day one, there's nothing there.
I mean, but it's indisputable is what they would say. But the problem is it's disputed with facts and with key witnesses that they don't ever want to bring up. We had Mark Sandy come in the deposition. He's from OMB. He said, part of the reason why this was all held up was because the European Union was not doing their fair share on supporting Ukraine. Guess which witness they didn't call?
Exactly.
I mean, within 30 minutes.
And you were the one that called me and mentioned and said, hey, they're not even releasing his testimony. Remember, they slow walked that. So is Trump going to sit there in a short and dirty trial? Is the president going to sit there and see 7,000 pages that Raheem has gone through and see Schiff curate that down to just a chain of title of hearsay
that takes the worst of Fiona Hill, takes the worst of Ambassador Taylor, takes the worst of Vindman, and the president's supposed to sit there and just listen to that and see that on global TV as they make a case at a hearsay?
Well, that's what they will do. And you think that we've had must-watch TV so far. This will be must-watch. They will have it orchestrated. I can tell you,
Head will blow up.
Adam Schiff's on his way back to Washington, D.C. right now to work with Speaker Pelosi and work on the team. Here's what I do believe. I do believe that they will go ahead and convey it to the Senate. I think that that happens next week, and it starts the trial in the Senate.
You don't think they wait for any more evidence to come out?
Well, they want more evidence, and they want they want to have some other people, witnesses, come in because their case is so weak, and yet at the same time, I can tell you who's not putting up with it. It's Mitch McConnell and the Republican senators. They hate when House members tell them what to do or try to tell them what to do, and normally they push back.
He's got a 3 o'clock speech scheduled for tomorrow afternoon where he's going to lay out the way things are going to be. What do you think Leader McConnell is going to say now?
Well, I think what he will say is we want to give this due process. We want it to be fair, but at the same time, if Speaker Pelosi is not going to make it fair, we're going to go ahead and allow both sides to present their case and dismiss it very quickly. I don't know that that's ultimately to the president's advantage for the reasons that we talked about, but it is what a lot of Americans want. They want to get on with this.
Brexit. They're tired of it and want to move on.
Let's move on. Let's get it done.
His place in history, because people, and I said this last week, and people on Twitter mocked me, he understands history. He understands his place in history. He understands how transformative he's been. For his place in history, 100 years from now, like we're looking at the Andrew Johnson trial, isn't it imperative that he gets his day in court to prove his innocence and to get exonerated, not just acquitted?
It is, and here's the reason. Do you remember when he said that some with his Trump campaign associates were actually spied on and everybody made fun of him?
Yes.
But ultimately, from even the IG's report, we
100%
say,
true.
Well, over a dozen times, yes, they were spied on, and yet we look at that and somehow dismiss it. The president said he was spied on; he wasn't really spied on, but he was.
If they get one of these quick and dirty acquittals, with the Democratic Party, they'll spin it and that he really didn't get off just because we had the votes.
Well, they'll spin it that he didn't give the witnesses, and if they had given the witnesses, it would have been a better trial and he would have been convicted. And so they'll spin it in a way that would suggest that there's more there. And I can tell you, having seen the documents, having been in the room, having looked at the eyes of the witnesses, I can tell you there's not anything there but hearsay.
So in looking at the eyes of the witnesses, Lee Zeldin,
yeah,
Jim Jordan,
yeah,
Mark Meadows, Matt Gaetz, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, right? During the first. But you guys know the material. I mean, Raheem knows it because he's gone through 7,000 pages and the guys in the war room. But
I'm not a congressman.
But my point is, not many even people on the conservative media side have done that. You have a better feel for it. But how many guys in the House? I had another congressman who said, how many guys have read this thing? He said, the four guys you just mentioned and a couple others maybe.
Yeah,
know the material. Why are you not going to be part of the team, the manager team, or whatever it's called coming out?
Well, that's still out there. Possibly that happens. I know.
And you're not a lawyer, but
no, I'm not.
But you know how to question.
Well, and Raheem actually has read more of it than at least 430 members of Congress.
You don't think they've gone through all the testimony?
I think there's only five members of Congress that have gone through all the testimony.
Don't you think that's imperative to have you as part of the team?
Well, it's imperative at least that you have that kind of knowledge there. And yes, and so that what happens when the lawyers go to make a point, you can say, Adam Schiff's saying this. This is not correct. If you'll go to this person's testimony, page six. I mean,
who should be part of the team for the president? If you had to pick your team,
if I had to pick a team, I would say you get in Jim Jordan, you get in a Matt Gaetz, you put your 18 Majon.
Why is Gaetz's name not popping up all the time?
He's
a fire breather and he's strategic. He's the one that blew this thing up in the star chamber.
Well, he had one of the greatest performances in the judiciary, and I say performances because
great,
he brought the truth. Listen, everybody wants to have their day in the sunshine. This is not a time to play politics. It's a time to put your best team on there. I think Matt Gaetz would be one of those.
So this thing, you think, okay, real quickly, we got about a minute left. You think in this segment, we got one more segment to come back. You believe that Nancy Pelosi
she's trying to get more evidence in it, but sometime next week, the week of the 7th, she transmits this to the Senate.
I think she does, because the pressure gets too much. You know, you can't be urgent about this business and then all of a sudden, you know, take a siesta.
In the Senate process right now, you would envision 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks? How do you think it plays out?
I think it's a two-week process, and I don't want to prejudge my Senate colleagues, but I think a two-week process.
So, in other words, for the Iowa primary, the Democrats are back in Iowa that weekend right before Super Bowl weekend, right before the Iowa caucuses, they're there.
Yep.
Okay, Stephen K. Bannon, we're on a John Frederick, Salem Radio, America's Voice News, and also Newsmax TV. Raheem Kassam, myself, we're here with Congressman Mark Meadows. We're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up, and I want to talk to the Congressman about China, and particularly the persecution of Christians, Muslims, and religious figures in China, an interest of his. When we return in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment. On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Episode 96, Thursday, 2 January, Year of the Lord 2020. First live show here in the new decade. War Room, Impeachment. We're here every day until the day after the acquittal slash exoneration of President Donald J. Trump. Mike Pompeo tweeted out yesterday about a Christian preacher tried in secret in China, condemned to 7 years hard labor in a prison. He comes out and says Beijing must reverse this. First time I've ever seen a Secretary of State telling Beijing what to do. I kind of dig it. You follow this very closely. Your thoughts?
Oh, well, I dig it, too. And only in a Trump administration would your Secretary of State be able to say must do something to Beijing. But the American people get it. And I can tell you that religious persecution is real. It happens every day in China. The listeners that are listening in right now, they know it. It's about time that somebody steps up. I was on the China Commission. I've seen everything. China is one of my big focuses. But when we look at this, it's only this president willing to take them on. And we
is this overall the macro, the defining issue of our time? Whoever wins this struggle of the existential threat of China will write the history of the 21st century?
Without a doubt. I mean, it is ours to write right now because of this president. But if not, if we fail, it will be someone else.
Okay, given
story.
That, and you're a guy, the student of history, you schlepped down to Australia with my colleague Raheem to talk at a strategic conference. What is in the future of Mark Meadows? You're one of the most talented guys in this town. You've got the big picture. You understand both the micro and the macro, which is quite rare in Washington, D.C. What's your future?
Well, we're going to stay in the fight. Stay in the fight for the movement. It's what I believe in. It's my passion. Whether I'm working directly with the president or alongside the president or alongside whoever comes after him in 5 years, we're going to stay in the fight because it's that key.
Your wife has now also started. She's involved in the fight too.
Yeah, she's on her own without.
She's actually the brains of the operation. The Meadows thing. I didn't want to say that.
She
just started her own pack.
Yeah, so she's going to work on electing conservative women to Congress, and we need more of that and more diversity. But certainly we want real conservatives, right? Women
at the right before the Iowa caucus. How do you think this will be playing? We got about 30 seconds for President Trump at the end of this trial of the century. How do you think he will stand at the end of it?
Well, I think at the end of it, not only will he be acquitted, but he will be exonerated. And what we'll see is that many, many of his Democrat opponents will suggest that there's more of a there. That will come back to haunt them as we move to the November elections in 2020.
Raheem, what do we have for people? How to get to the site? What are we doing today? And you're back engaged now. We're going.
Yep.
The thing's been not fabulous. It's been fabulous over the holidays.
Disengaged. But we're back full pelt on warroom.org. All the latest news as it pertains to the impeachment process, www.warroom.org. And remember, you can sign up. The newsletter is free. The podcast is free. Leave a review. 5 stars, if you will. 4 stars at worst, please. But we really appreciate you guys getting engaged and pushing us up the podcast rankings. Every time we go up, more and more people see it, listen to it, and get the truth.
Okay, I think we're the only show that's on live streaming. We're on National Radio Network. We're on the John Fredericks Regional Radio Network. We're throughout the world on the live stream. Also on all the homepages of these websites, and particularly on Newsmax TV at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Our colleague Jason Miller will be with John Cadilla. I want to thank everybody. See you back here tomorrow live, 9 a.m., War Room Impeachment. Episode 96.
Thanks for being in the fight.